On 19th of February, we went to the Queen Elizabeth II Conference Centre in Westminster for a big rally that was organised by Grassroots Out. There were lots of people on the stage. Some of them came as surprise guests, others we knew about in advance. I was lucky enough to get a seat near the front so I could see what was going on. I think there were nearly 2,000 people there, so it was a really very, very big meeting, very impressively organised. The sound system, as you will hear, sort of seemed to come and go in places, actually. So my apologies for the fact that the sound quality isn't always as good as it could be, but you can hear the vast majority of what's going on here. Then came another Conservative Member of Parliament. This is David Davis, one of the real veterans of the Conservative Eurosceptic cause. He's held ministerial office, former Shadow Home Secretary, represents a Yorkshire constituency, an absolutely marvellous orator. He was on top form this evening, and I think I found him one of the most interesting. So anyway, here's David Davis, Member of Parliament.
Never done a speaker at trailer before. You know, the chairman said, told you that I used to be the Shadow Home Secretary. And in that job, I used to have to go and speak to a lot of unusual audiences. One of the more difficult ones was going to speak to prisoners in prisons. Used to give me a problem about how I could start. You know, standing in Wandsworth Prison, it's a privilege to be here, it didn't really work. and looking at a bunch of rapists and murderers and frauds and so on, you know, it's an honour to speak to you, didn't work either. So I came up with a formula, which, looking at you lot, would work here, actually. And it was, I'm so pleased to see so many of you here. I say that because earlier this evening, I was one of several hundred people who were locked out by the Health and Safety Police from this meeting, because there are too many of you to fit in. You're above the fire standards. So it says something about the organisation, so well done all of you for getting here. Particularly because the time has come. The time has come for our nation to make the greatest decision of our generation, for our nation to stand on its own two feet, and for our nation to take control of its own destiny. And before we talk about that, I'd like to start by getting rid of the inferiority complex that our political opponents in this argument seem to suffer from. They don't believe in our country. I'd like you all to remember, everybody in this room, just remember how lucky you are. How lucky you are to be born in this country. Because we are an incredibly fortunate country. And how do you expect a country of 60 million people, a tiny island off the cold northwest shore of Europe, to be as important, as powerful, as influential, as wealthy, to have as much reach as Britain does? We are a permanent member of the UN Security Council. We're a leading member of the G7. We're a leading member of the Commonwealth. We're a leading NATO member, America's favourite ally. And we, of course, we're widely respected worldwide. All of that before we join the European Union. And why? Well, because we're the country of William Shakespeare and Isaac Newton, of Faraday and Rutherford, of Charles Darwin and Alexander Fleming. We're the country that created, that started the Industrial Revolution. Our language, the English language, is the dominant international language in science, engineering, medicine, the internet, TV and film, if you count American, international commerce, even international law. You know, it's amazing. All those Russian oligarchs come and sort out their arguments in the royal courts of justice. So, we have all that. But above all of this, we created the first liberal democracy in the modern world. We are the first democracy. And again, we did this before we joined the EU. So we are different. And this is something I noticed when I was a Europe Minister. We are different. Remember the origins of not everybody else's, but most of the other countries' involvement in the European Union. Germany and France and Italy created the precursor after years of dictatorship and defeat. When Spain joined, it was after the dictator Franco. Portugal, after the dictator Catana. Greece, after the colonels. Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, the entire Eastern European group, after escaping from under the Soviet jackboot. So it's hardly surprising for them that the European Union represents modernity and democracy. That's what they're comparing it with. But we had democracy for a century and a half before we joined. So we know what it really means. And we know that it isn't just about casting a vote, it's about casting out bad governments. And as you heard me say on there, how do you cast out the European Commission? So we have a problem with the way democracy works in Europe. And this is not an esoteric issue to be discussed in Democracy or Politics 101 or a PPE course. This has real, serious implications. We've had a very good set of recent demonstrations. Look what they did to Greece. For the European elite conspired with a crooked Greek government and Goldman Sachs, with well-known bankers, to bring Greece into the euro wrongfully, on fraudulent numbers.
Yeah.
And who did they punish? Did they punish the crooked Greek government? No, they didn't. Did it punish Goldman Sachs? I don't think so. You saw the advert, didn't you? The simple truth is, they punished the Greek people. They imposed policies on the country that crippled it. Cut its economy by a quarter. Not a recession, not a slowdown, not a stop. They cut the size of the economy by a quarter. Unemployment soared, youth unemployment 60%. They took away the chances of an entire generation. But that wasn't all. Hospitals were closed. Food consumption went down by 25%. Children died. Infant mortality went up by 40%. TB rates doubled, HIV up, malaria back. That's what this so-called democratic European Union did to Greece. I'd just like you to imagine for a second, if any British government tried to do something like that to a part of our country, what would happen? Can you imagine if we visited policies like that on Lancashire, or Lincolnshire, I speak as a Yorkshireman, or Lincolnshire? The government would be challenged in Parliament, and if it didn't put it right, it would fall. But not in Europe. That is the price of not being a real democracy. And what are we being offered today to fix this imperious bureaucracy? A deal will not give power back to Parliament. A deal will not give us control over our own borders. A deal will not protect the City of London. And a deal which will not change the treaty in any way, and as a result, will not limit the European Court from overruling governments and parliaments alike in any country they choose to. And to add to insult to injury today, we have Belgium's proposal that we never be allowed to object to anything ever again. You know, my memory may be faulty, but I think I'm right in saying that Napoleon described Belgium as a country invented by the English to embarrass the French. Well, maybe they're trying to get their own back. I suppose we should be used to being threatened. We're a big, powerful country, we should be used to being threatened. We were threatened by Napoleon, threatened by Kaiser, threatened by Hitler, threatened by Brezhnev. Threatened by the French and the Germans and the Russians, fine. But by the Belgians? And of course, that's how this campaign is going. I don't know what you call the other side of the argument, the in-crowd, the Remainians, or whatever they're called. But the in-crowd are trying to threaten us too. We're told if we leave, we won't be allowed to trade with the European Union. Really? Really? Under international agreements signed by the EU, tariffs are limited to 5%, except for a couple of categories. Agriculture and cars. Who makes wine and cars? Now, if you want to see why we're guaranteed to get a deal, I want you to answer in your mind two questions. First, who is the most powerful politician in Europe? Angela Merkel. A prize for the man in the front there. Secondly, I don't want you to do this, but metaphorically, I'd like you all to go outside in the road and count up the number of Audis, BMWs, Mercedes, Volkswagens. They're the one with the smoke trail behind them. Count them up. There are over a quarter, nearly a third, actually, it's nearly 30% now, of British cars sold in Britain are from those four makes. That's not counting the Skodas and the Seats, who are also owned by German companies. We're the second fastest growing, sorry, we're the fastest growing car market in Europe, the second biggest, and we will be the biggest in due course. What do you think will happen the day after Brexit? So Angela Merkel? There'll be the chief executives of all those companies hammering on her door, demanding free access to the British market, for which the price will be free access to their market. So you can assure. What else is there on Project Fear? Oh, yes. They say that we could not deport criminals back to the UK without the EU. Really? What do they think happened before the EU? They really think that European countries would refuse to deport criminals, terrorists back to the UK? We've got one of the biggest, most powerful anti-terrorist criminal intelligence organisations in Europe, in our country. We are one of the most effective anti-terrorist operators in the Western world. You really think they're not going to negotiate and deal with us over the return of terrorists to the UK? It's ridiculous. It's stupid. It's absolutely, after Paris in particular, it's offensive nonsense.
Yeah.
So I say to you all, we have nothing to fear but Project Fear itself. Now, I've got to catch a train, sadly. The door's still closed, but I wanted really to characterise in a British way how I see. I'm sorry, Prime Minister. I wanted to characterise the British way. In a British way, how I really saw what was coming next. And I lit upon an extract, or a poem, in fact, by G.K. Chesterton called The Secret People. It's about us. It's actually about the English, so those of you who are not English, okay. But it's about us, broadly. And I'm just going to read you six lines. They're not in sequence, but I'll read you six lines from that poem, because I think they say something to us. You laugh at us and love us, both mugs and eyes are wet, and you do not know us, for we have not spoken yet. We hear men speaking for us of new laws, strong and sweet. Yet is there no man speaketh as we speak in the street? Smile at us, passers pay us, but do not quite forget, for we are the people of England that have not spoken yet. Yeah. The people of England will speak, and the people of Scotland, and Northern Ireland, and Wales, and they will speak in a strong and clear voice, and they will say, give us back our heritage, give us back our future, give us back control of our own country. Thank you.
Then came John Boyd. Now, John Boyd is from the trade union movement. He represents those within the union movement who are very Eurosceptic and are very suspicious of the European Union and the way in which big business manages to lobby Brussels to get things done to suit them rather than to suit people. But anyway, have a listen to John Boyd. He's a very different character to David Davis, brings quite a different sort of aspect to have a look at the whole Eurosceptic issue.
Thank you for that introduction and the applause. It's not the biggest meeting I've ever addressed, but it's getting on that way. I had a birthday card the other day which said, if everything's going for you, your hair's going, you're breathing smile, your teeth are going, your eyesight's going, so I defy that by being here in my later life. Our campaign, we call it CAFE, was founded in 1992 to address the Labour and trade union movement and win it back to the anti-EU position it held from the 1960s until 1988. This is the year when Jack Delors and the myth of social Europe to the trade union movement sold it to the trade union movements in Denmark, Ireland and Britain. And Hendrik, a friend of mine, would tell you that. And that was in exchange for support for the European Union. This was in the run-up to the Maastricht Treaty, the single market and the single currency. And thank goodness we didn't join the single currency.
Yeah.
The Labour movement has organisations which represent, in one way or another, the aspirations of the vast majority of the population, which is working class. There are nearly 6.5 million trade unionists. There are still organisations, trade unions and political parties in the movement who oppose the EU. And there's a big trade union that apparently is going to announce on Monday that it's going to join Go. I can't tell you who it is. In general, the media ignores us. I hope they don't tonight. But one thing is certain, we're not going to win this referendum without the Labour and trade union movement. CAFE's position has always stood firmly on the right of nation states to self-determination, national independence and democracy. And we've also stood on platforms all the way through with anybody who's opposed to the EU, and that's why we're here this evening. The EU is the antithesis of democracy, and previous speakers have made this clear. It is a super state governed by EU institutions. But we need to make clear there is a continent of Europe and the European Union. Don't talk about Europe, that's a propaganda victory. We must talk about the continent of Europe or the European Union. The searching question is Norway in Europe? Because it's, you don't know the answer. The Commission is unelected, unaccountable, and the executive and legislature of the EU. The Council of Ministers and EU summits use qualified majority voting, in which Britain has just 12.6% of the votes. So much for all the power and influence we have in the EU. It has to gain 15 other member states to support any proposal. That's why Mr. Cameron has been going on jollies all around Europe, trying to garner support for his so-called reforms. The European Court of Justice, from our point of view on the trade union side, has passed judgments which have come out against collective bargaining. There is no guarantee in the fundamental rights in the Lisbon Treaty to strike. If you can't strike, you're a slave. And they come out for the free movement of labour, which we oppose. Did you know that in Lille, in France, there is a European rail agency where legislation for rail privatisation and other rail packages are prepared and passed to the Commission and national governments to put in place? Directives have to be put in place. 91/440 was used to privatise the railways. There was a directive to privatise the postal services. That was never published. EU laws and legislation were changed from an intergovernmental system to a superstate and a union by the Lisbon Treaty, which Ruth has just mentioned. That's the old European Constitution, which they cut and pasted and turned it into the Lisbon Treaty. In Britain, we did not have the opportunity to discuss and decide whether we wanted the treaty before it was ratified. If we want to leave the EU, it is the Lisbon Treaty which must be discussed. And Ruth's drawn attention to a couple of articles, and there are a lot more. And to discuss this treaty and not the charade of the trivial reforms played out today and probably tomorrow. While that's all going on, the European Commissioner for Trade is negotiating undemocratically the secret Transatlantic Trade and Investment Treaty, and it's nothing about trade at all, with her counterpart in Washington. TTIP and the Associated Interstate Dispute Settlement, ISDS tribunals, overarch the EU with the object of bolting together the EU and the US markets with poorer regulations on food, labour conditions and wages, and so on. ISDS gives transnational corporations powers to take governments to courts, their own courts, their secret courts, and there's plenty of information of that around. For instance, the Egyptian government was taken to one of these courts, fined for daring to raise the minimum wage. The claws are out via TTIP and ISDS to grab and privatise the NHS for the largest lobby group in the US, the health and pharmaceutical companies. TTIP and ISDS override our parliaments and our democracy. There is, however, a growing movement against TTIP and ISDS. For instance, a quarter of a million Germans demonstrated on the streets of Berlin against TTIP. A petition signed by over 3 million people was lodged with the European Parliament. The TUC and most trade unions are opposed to TTIP. However, despite all this opposition, these same institutions support the EU. It's a complete contradiction. You can't be both against TTIP and for the EU. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Leave EU has published a pamphlet called Stop TTIP, and I hope you will get hold of some of these, read about it, understand it, and pass the word around. Kate says that democracy only works within nation states and not between them. There's no democracy between us and Greece, for instance. To date, the world is run with nation states having the right to self-determination and national democracy. There are more nation states today than there were 10 years ago. The nation state is here to stay for the foreseeable future. It is not a 19th century anachronism. Those who want to end nation states and national democracy are those forces behind TTIP, ISDS, and the EU. Britain, as a nation state to function to the benefit of the people of Britain, must have control of its own borders, must be able to control its fisheries and the sea underneath, protect its industries and jobs involved, control borders to decide who comes into Britain. That means bringing to an end the free movement of labour in order to protect wages and stop the race to the bottom. And that's a trade union term. These are the concerns of all who work for their living and their trade union. The free movement of labour and immigration are different issues. Both require control of Britain's borders. Since the 1975 referendum, which I took part in, the deindustrialisation of Britain is all but complete. And I'm talking as an engineer. We had a coal industry, a steel industry, shipbuilding and a manufacturing. We traded across the world, as Ruth earlier has stated. Those industries were the backbone of the economy and which created wealth to pay for all the public services such as the NHS and the welfare state. There are 1,680,000 people out of work at the moment. Many of these are young people and their lives are being wrecked. We have soup kitchens and food banks. The alternative to EU membership is to have an economy based on manufacturing, associated industries, and to trade across the world, including nation states in the EU. Instead of an economy based on financial and service industries, which got us into deep water. That's in addition to being locked into a crisis with the EU. We need to get out of the thing. Regarding jobs, for example, part of the alternative outside the EU lies in the continent of Africa, the subcontinent of India and Pakistan, which need electrification. They haven't got electrification. We should make the equipment and other manufacturers. We need a merchant navy to carry these goods and a steel industry and shipbuilding, making ships to carry the goods. We can work out amongst ourselves and with others a rational future for Britain and its peoples. CAFE says the only way to oppose TTIP, ISDS, rule by Brussels and the free movement of everything is to dump the Lisbon Treaty. This referendum is not a game of football with red and yellow cards. We must show the red card to Messrs Juncker, Tusk, Schultz and Cameron.
Yeah,
get
yeah.
them off the pitch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We need a massive vote to leave the EU.
Yeah.
On behalf of all those in the Labour movement who oppose the EU, I wish all sections of the campaign from wherever constituency come all the best in getting us out of the EU. Thank you.
And next up was Ruth Lee. She's one of Britain's leading economists. She has a clear analytical mind, and she focuses on the economic effects of Brexit.
It's a bit of an obstacle course. I'm delighted to appear to be talking about the economic issues, and indeed a couple of the speakers have already touched on them, so forgive me if I repeat one or two of the points they've made, but I think the most important points. The first thing I would like to say before I go on to the economics is that I want to leave the EU because I want to live in a country that can make its own decisions and make its own way in the world without being restricted by EU membership.
Yeah.
I want to live in a free country, the country that actually I was born into some years ago. I think the picture was quite an old picture, but never mind. It's as simple as that. But we know in the referendum campaign that economic issues are going to be very, very important. And specifically, I think, when you're talking about the Brexit's impact on trade and jobs. But clearly, the saving on the EU budget contributions will be a nice little fillip if and when we do leave. Because in 2014, our net contributions, that was net of the rebate, they were £14 billion, which I know may or may not sound quite a big sum of money, but it's actually quite useful to have in one's pocket, £14 billion. As for for trade and jobs, for reasons I shall explain in a minute, I believe that in the short term, the overall impact will be absolutely minimal. People will hardly notice if we leave Brexit. Trade will continue, as one of the earlier speakers said, and so will those jobs dependent on that trade. There'll be nothing to laugh at all. I think that was little Albert and the Lion, wasn't it, when they went to Blackpool and there was no laughing, there was no drownings, there was nothing to laugh at all. What do you mean? I do actually come from the north of England, that's why I sort of break into this brilliant. Now saying there would be collapse or there would be Armageddon, they would be bitterly disappointed. But I think that's in the short run, I don't think there'll be very much impact. But in the long term, as I shall say in a few minutes, I think the overall position would be absolutely beneficial to the economy of this country. But let's just go back to this trade business in the short run. Why am I so confident that the impact on trade would be absolutely minimal if Brexit? Well, last week's trade figures, We actually had a goods deficit of 125 billion, which was yet another record. I'm sure the government's very proud about that. But I say it was a goods deficit of 125 billion. 89 billion of that deficit was with the EU. 89 billion. And 31.6 billion was with Germany alone. 31.6. That's nearly 1.5-2% of British GDP. And I can't imagine for one second that any German car exporter or any French wine exporter to this country would want any disruption or any impediments to their trade with this country. As David has already said, then we would be trading under the World Trade Organization rules. We would not be bobbing around in the middle of the Atlantic. Have you heard that one recently? For some reason, these people who are insistent that we stay in think they would be carted out of the mid-Atlantic beyond Rockall and bob around. How do you have an island bob? I just don't understand them. No, we'd be still firmly part of the world economy, there'd be no doubt about that. And let's remind ourselves that the vast majority of the countries of the world are not in the EU. And of course, if we were just under the WTO rules, we would be subject to what is known as the Common External Tariff, which excites some of us, but I suspect not many of us, but there we go. On the whole, the average tariff is now only about 1%, but there are tariffs on cars, for example, that are nearly 10. So our exporters would face that if there's no trade agreement, and indeed, the German exporters would face the tariffs that this country would impose. Obviously, they're going to get round the table, and they're going to negotiate a trade agreement. It's in our interests. It's in their interests. I had the great pleasure yesterday of hearing Lord Kinnock on the Today programme. And you know what he said? He said, we need them more than they need us.
Rubbish!
Rubbish!
Because our share of trade to the EU was bigger than the EU's share of trade to us. Well, I think one lady's already suggested this, but in the words of another lady, no, no, no! On the goods account, they needed us more than we needed them to the tune of £89 billion. Mr. Kinnock. But commercial interests aside, and actually I think that is, as the lady earlier implied, that is what makes the world go round, obviously what makes the world go round. The Lisbon Treaty has got a couple of articles that are well worth noting and well worth looking up. One is Article 8, that becomes between 7 and 9, and it says it talks about a special relationship with neighbouring countries, aiming to establish an area of prosperity and good neighbourliness. Think about that, neighbourliness. They want to be friendly. That's what Article 8 says. And Article 50, of course, which is about withdrawal, does say that the EU shall negotiate and conclude an agreement taking account of the framework for the future relationship with the Union. In other words, the Lisbon Treaty talks about the mood music, friendship, as well as the mechanisms for withdrawal. We should remember that. And I suspect, because I don't have that negative view of our EU partners, I just don't want to be in the EU. We should remember that, and I think they would honour it. And just quickly on the 3 million jobs. This is something that Nick Clegg is very fond of, on the grounds that presumably more vote than the votes than the Lib Dems got. But it's a much earlier that it's conjured up, taking the proportion of EU share of exports over GDP multiplied by the labour force, so come up with 3 billion. By the way, on that basis, the number of EU jobs dependent on trade with the UK would be nearly 4. But such little things negate in the way of Nick Clegg's universe. But would these be under threat? Well, if I'm right, and I think we are right, I really am quite convinced I'm right, then and the trade is barely affected, these jobs are not under threat at all. And I think, rather than go on to sort of, I'll just very, very quickly say what I would see that if we're outside Brexit, where we could get competitive advantage. We could actually amend and repeal the most irksome business regulations that, again, the lady said earlier, was talking about earlier. We could negotiate our own trade deals with certain countries that are important to us, like China and Japan and Australia and New Zealand, the United States of America. The EU does not have trade agreements with those countries. And it was interesting to me and rather entertaining me this week, because I think Simone Brake said, oh, we're not big enough to negotiate our own trade deals. Well, I'd like to remind somebody that actually there's a funny little country called Iceland that managed to negotiate a trade agreement with China. And so if Iceland's big enough, shucks, I think we're big enough. Say is that we'd be able to have a non-discriminatory immigration policy, not discriminating between EU and non-EU nationals as we do at the moment. I think that would be a big bonus economically, and of course, as I've already implied, then we would have the benefit of the net contributions to the budget back into our own coffers. So, but to wrap up, I think in the campaign we will have a big job of neutralising the scare stories. And the scare stories are around us all the time. You know that the Remainians, as some people call them, are going to talk about the collapse of trade. They won't trade with us. They're going to say these things. They're going to talk about the horrors of Brexit. And the CBI, of course, will be at the forefront of this misinformation. And they were doing their best to sort of spread terror throughout the land. But they do, of course, have form. I remember debating with the CBI over the Euro campaign. They thought it was a jolly good idea to join. And life would have been doom and gloom if we hadn't done. Do you remember that? I certainly remember it. And I remember feeling very isolated at the time because we were one of the few business voices at the time that said the Euro was economically a disastrous mistake. And for those of more mature years, I've no doubt you'll remember Terence Beckett's bare-knuckle fight with Mrs. Thatcher's government. It did not end well. However, that's enough. But I really do say to all of you, I think all our hearts are in the same places here, I suspect. We would love to meet the EU. But we will have a big, big, big job in reassuring people that their jobs and trade will be safe if Brexit. That's where we'll have to really do some homework.
Yeah.
Next onto the stage was somebody you might be familiar with, one chap by the name of Nigel Farage. He's, of course, UKIP leader and member of the European Parliament for South East England. I think we all know who Nigel is, and he was on absolutely cracking form, gave a barnstormer of a speech. So sit back, listen and enjoy.
I've come here tonight straight from Brussels, which is all that can be said of the Prime Minister, who's still there. Well, I've heard in the last 10 minutes that a deal has now finally been done. So perhaps we could put David up for an Oscar. Because he kept telling us he was battling for Britain and he was up till 5 o'clock in the morning. A deal has been done, but what kind of deal is it? Just think back 3 years to that Bloomberg speech, the high vaunting ambitions, the fundamental treaty change, the change of Britain's relationship, powers back to the United Kingdom. There was even talk of reform of the European Union itself. And what has happened over the last 48 hours is a British Prime Minister has gone to meet 27 other heads of state and frankly given an impression of Oliver Twist by saying, please gentlemen, can I have some more concessions? Is that what we've come to as a nation? I think we're better than that, don't you?
Yes! Yes.
And this deal that he's done, and we'll get the details perhaps in the next hour or so, but this deal that he's done does not address the fundamental issues that British people care about. It does not address the issue that our Parliament is not able to overrule bad EU law. It does not address the issue that we should not be paying £55 million a day to a club whose accounts have not been signed off for nearly 20 years.
Yeah.
It does not address the fundamental issue and the number one issue in British politics, which is that we have a total open door to over 500 million people. It does none of those things, and yet, after a cabinet meeting at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, there'll be a press conference, and the Prime Minister will tell you he's won this amazing deal, that we've been given permission to limit migrant benefits for up to 4 years. Well, even that deal is no good, because the European Parliament have the ability to pick it to pieces and veto it, and any other promise of what will be written into a future European treaty can be struck down by the European Court of Justice. Dave's deal is not worth the paper that it's written on. Him on the 4th of February, he said the deal looked so good that he would now, in a referendum, vote for Britain to join the European Union.
Shame.
Well, let's have a little think about that, shall we? Imagine the Prime Minister saying, I'm calling a referendum on June the 23rd to ask you, the British people, to join the European Union. Yes, I know that since Simon de Montfort, we've had a sovereign parliament, but really this is now rather outdated, and wouldn't it be better if henceforth 75% of our laws were made elsewhere? He would say that our Supreme Court hasn't been doing a bad job, but really, wouldn't it be better to hand over the ultimate judicial power in this country to a court in Luxembourg, staffed by people, none of whom are actually judges? He might say, I know you've been familiar with the idea that a nation state controls its borders, that a nation state can decide who comes to live, work, and settle in that country. But for goodness sake, we wouldn't want to be like Australia in the modern world, would we? I mean, the idea that we should stop people coming into our country who've got criminal records just shows you how Australia's changed, doesn't it, really? No. So anyone can come in, we'll have a total open door to over 500 million people. The concept that the National Health Service could deal with 65 million people again, wouldn't it be better to open up the health service to 508 million people? I'm not sure that'll go down very well. He'd probably say that the idea that we have control over our seas up to 200 miles of the North Sea is really terribly unfair on our European neighbours, and what we're going to do is close down the British fishing industry and give it away to Europe. Oh, and by the way, for the benefit of all of this, we're going to pay a membership fee of over £50 million a day, which is the equivalent of building a new district hospital every single week. Does anybody in this room or in this country think that we would vote now to join this European Union.
No. No.
Absolutely right. And what we're going to be asked to do is asked to remain in a union that will not be static. We'll be asked to remain in a union that has now a very ambitious foreign policy, which I believe in many ways could prove to be dangerous. We'll be asked to remain in a union that is fanatical in its attempt to centralise all power and to sweep away the ability of nation-state parliaments and the electorates to change the laws by which they live. We'll be asked to remain in a European Union that is so hell-bent on expansion that it now wants, within 5 years, for Turkey to become a member. We'll be asked to vote to remain in a union whose currency is clearly a failure, where tens of millions of people in the Mediterranean have been impoverished, and we'll be asked to vote to stay in a union whose migration policy, as expressed by Mr. Juncker, and then by the one that seemed to be inevitably heading as the greatest modern German leader, but not any longer, Angela Merkel, whose disastrous decision to say, "O come, all ye faithful," has led to a million people settling in Germany in 1 year, and now we see Schengen under collapse. We're being asked to remain in a union that has no popular consent anywhere in Europe, asked to remain in a union that, when it was frank with the peoples of Europe, when it said it had a constitution, saw the French and the Dutch reject it, and yet ignored their will and pushed on with the Lisbon Treaty. We'll be asked to remain in a union that now resembles a burning building, but the good news, folks, is there is an exit door, and I suggest we take it. About economics, there'll be arguments about trade, there'll be arguments about security, there'll be arguments about defence, but there's one argument above all that we in this movement must grasp, and we must understand that actually what has happened in our country, perhaps ever since Suez, back in the 1950s, is that our ruling classes have collectively lost faith in our ability to make our own laws, to control our own borders, to make our own trade deals, to stand on the world stage. They make arguments. They say we're not big enough to be on our own. We're not strong enough to be on our own. But what they mean is we're not good enough to stand on our own. And their chief spokesperson now, Emma Thompson, well, Peter Mandelson thinks the same thing, doesn't he? Tony Blair thinks the same thing, doesn't he? Nick Clegg thinks the same thing. Did we get more booze for Clegg than Emma Thompson? But the point is, ladies and gentlemen, they don't think we're good enough. They don't believe in this country. They don't believe in the people of this country. And I do believe in the people of this country. And this campaign must be upbeat and optimistic. This campaign must be about respecting those that went before us and defended parliamentary democracy against the world at war, and our determination to hand that legacy of freedom, liberty, justice, and pride in who we are to our children and grandchildren. This is what we're fighting for.
And the final speaker came as a bit of a surprise to everybody present, I think. It was George Galloway. Now, George is a very interesting character. Of course, he holds some very robust views on a wide range of subjects, Euroscepticism being one of them. And he's another veteran opponent of the European Union, former Labour Member of Parliament. Then he moved to Respect. And of course, we all know George's views coming on different issues. But anyway, he gave a really good speech, I thought. And the closing remarks that he made really summed up the mood of the meeting. So over to George Galloway.
Comrades and friends. First of all, I'd like to thank Nigel Farage very sincerely for his kind welcome, the more generous because Nigel and I agree on hardly anything at all. But we do agree at least on one thing, and it happens to be the most important thing, not only now, but in the lifetime of everyone in this hall and everyone in this country. It is the demand that Britain should be an independent, sovereign, and democratic country, and that means leaving the European Union. Country, all of us will have different visions of what our country could be, should be. But the fundamental point is, none of us here in this hall, none of us here in this country are in a position to decide which vision of Britain should come to pass, because that power has been given away to a lavishly funded, bureaucratic state, to a toothless, fantastically financed pseudo-parliament, and to a council of ministers of countries which, to be fair, how could it be otherwise, act in their own national interests rather than ours. And that means that our independence as a country is no more, and we have an exit door, as Nigel just said, and if we don't take it, then we and our children and their children will lament and regret that we did not take that opportunity which now comes before us. To be here to nail the lie that to be on this side of the argument is to be on the political right. I fought the 1975 referendum behind my then leader, the late and great Right Honourable Tony Benn, and it's in memory of him that I'm standing here this evening. Tony Benn won us the right to have a referendum in 1975, and this I must say, but for Nigel Farage, we would not be having a referendum on this question.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Member of the European Union has anything to do with Lent. As my friend for nearly 40 years, though she was obviously a child then, Kate Hoy, pointed out, what's Lent about TTIP allowing American corporations to smash down the doors of the National Health Service and privatize what they like with the power of law behind them? What's left
about driving down workers' wages and conditions. What's left about a situation? And you know, this I must say, I know that this is one of my differences with Nigel. I have not just respect, but love for the people of Romania. I'm the only person in this room that has published a book in the Romanian language. I even speak a little bit of Romanian. But I cannot agree to subcontract to the Romanian government the right to decide who can come and live and work in Britain, who we can deport from Britain, what level of deficit we can run in Britain, or what our foreign policy in Britain should be. That I cannot do. I want to nail the lie that to be on this side of the argument is to wallow in nationalism. As a matter of fact, I hate nationalism. I've fought Scottish nationalism all my life, and I helped win the referendum in Scotland in 2014, defeating Scottish nationalism. I hope to help win this referendum in a few months' time. That's why I'm pleased to say I have yesterday, on behalf of my party, signed up as an affiliate of Grassroots Out, and I hope that the Electoral Commission will give this broadly based all-party campaign the designation of the official Out campaign. Neither am I a British nationalist. Being a Scotsman from Irish background, I can hardly be called a little Englander. There is nothing internationalist about locking yourself out of the world. There is nothing internationalist about locking yourself in, although the locks seem to have broken, into a rich man's club in a part of Europe. I want the world to be our oyster. I want to trade with the Commonwealth that we so shamefully abandoned.
Yeah! Yeah.
I want to trade with Brazil, with Russia, with India, with China, with South Africa, with Iran, where the sun is rising, not setting, and where most of the customers in the world actually live. So we will not be cutting ourselves off from anything if we leave the European Union. We will be opening ourselves to the entire world. Now that is internationalism. I mentioned the Eurocrats. I was a member of the British Parliament for almost 30 years, and I woke up one morning to discover that somebody called Catherine Ashton was now my foreign minister. Like Nigel in the wonderful footage you just saw, my question was, who are you? Who elected you? Who can remove you? And I watched as this person I'd never heard of before, on our behalf, dragged us into one confrontation after another with one adversary after another. Now, to be fair, it may very well be that the British government, maybe any British government, certainly in recent years, would have taken us into those same confrontations. But at least I could have fought against that here, and Parliament could have overturned that there. And David Davis has left, a man I greatly love and respect. David Davis and I were part of an epic debate in 2014 when that genius Cameron tried to persuade us to become the Air Force for ISIS and Al-Qaeda and start bombing Syria. The American Air Force was warming up on the tarmac, just waiting for a rubber stamp from the British Parliament of David Cameron's point of view. But in an epic debate in which speeches changed the outcome, his speech and my speech among them changed the outcome, we defeated Cameron, and the engines had to be switched off at the Andrews Air Base, and we narrowly, by 13 votes, avoided becoming embroiled in a disaster. That's the kind of parliamentary sovereignty I believe in. And that's the kind that we can have. I don't want you to think that I'm any kind of pacifist against all wars. If I was alive and of age, I would have been among the first in the queue to volunteer to fight in the Second World War. Indeed, I would have been one of those agitating that we should confront fascism earlier and with all the vigor that we could then muster. But the war, when it came, was, as Mr. Churchill said, our finest hour, when we all went forward together. Mr. Churchill and Mr. Attlee and Mr. Bevan, together as one front rank, leading the British people, never as united before or since, and we wrote our name in the stars. That's what we are doing here tonight. Mr. Farage and me, Miss Hoy and Mr. Davis. Left, right, forward march to victory.
As a right-wing conservative member of parliament, it gives me great pleasure to say, what a wonderful speech, George Galloway. Yeah. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, it shows that the Go movement is not a UKIP front, it's not a Tory front, it's not a Labour front, and it's not a respect front. It is a movement where everyone works together. And the final thing we have to do tonight is sign the Go Pledge. And it says, we the undersigned declare that in the weeks and months ahead, we shall set aside party politics and work together towards our common goal of a free and prosperous United Kingdom outside the European Union, engaged with the wider world, and governed by its own laws. And we're going to sign that pledge right now. Yeah. So if this huge crowd can make its way up here, we can sign the declaration.
And that about wrapped it up for the Grassroots Out rally being held in Westminster on the 19th of February. Just a reminder that this is Rupert Matthews, the campaign manager at Better Off Out. If you want to learn more about our campaign, visit our website www.betteroffout.net. We've got a wide range of campaigning materials to help take Britain out of the European Union. Contact us through the website. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter. We've got our own YouTube channel and so on. So cheerio. Campaign goes onwards and upwards.